101.1 FM WUSB Stony Brook. My name is Steve Kreitzer. Welcome to Turmoil. With me in the studios from England, poet, artist, writer, Nick Tocic. Welcome, Nick.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Nick is in New York for just this day. He's heading up to Canada to do a spoken word performance art series, I guess.
Yeah, I'm touring with a couple of bands. I'm working, performing solo in between the stuff I do, some of which people listening to this program regularly will probably have heard. But some of the stuff that I do is based around lyrics, stuff that I actually record with bands. But when I go out solo performing, I perform the lyrics without the music. It's called rant poetry, I suppose. Quite popular in England. There aren't that many people doing it over here.
No, none of that I can think of. In England, it seems more the Attila the Stockbroker, Seething Wells, poets like that. Have you been involved with those artists?
Yeah, I mean, I know them very well. Seething Wells used to live in the same house as me. Attila has spilt curry all over my carpet. So.
Okay, you're going to be playing at the New Literatures Festival in Montreal, Canada.
That's right.
How did you get into that?
Was Ken Lester, manager of DOA. I put DOA on in England, and he was staying at my house, picked up some of my tapes, took them back to Canada, played them to loads of people, told them to get me over. I came over last year with your help, amongst others, with the Instigators, and did an American tour. So coming back here to try and consolidate that, build Canadian contacts, and next time round do a tour of the whole landmass. So that'll be next year. So, I mean, I intend to be back again fairly regularly. So if anybody doesn't like what I do, tough, I'm coming back.
Okay, you've brought a few poems of yours with you.
I have indeed.
Would you like to read one for us?
I thought you'd never ask. Right. Okay, this is a piece called New York Chant. It runs into another piece called Sheer Funk. Start off with these because they're sort of American. New York Chant was one that I wrote while I was here last year. I go New York, I go New York, where dead men walk like pigs from pork. I go New York, pigs with pigments, carbon chalk. I go New York, eat yourself with a needle and fork. I go New York, liberty's hollow, stand and gawk. And I go New York, I go New York, for so much sexless architecture. I go New York, where dead men walk like pigs from pork. Pigs with pigments, carbon chalk. Eat yourself with a needle and fork. Liberty's hollow, stand and gawk. I go New York, I go New York, for the holy soul of Coca-Cola said, holy soul of Coca-Cola said, holy soul of Coca-Cola. And I go New York, and it's time to talk, time to talk, time to talk about the CIA. Time to talk, time to talk, time to talk about the CIA doing silent crimes in violent times. Do you feel the need for relief? Ha! Do you wheel and deal in dollars and dimes? Do you steal your joy, like a thief? It's a dead cert when you flirt with dirt. Someone's gonna get hurt. And it's time to talk, time to talk, time to talk about the CIA. Time to talk, time to talk, time to talk about the CIA right now. Sheer funk. Will the kingdom come when they flog a dead horse? Will they cling to the crumbling walls? Will they bring divorce and sex by force? Will they sing? Will they sing? Will they sing when the citadel sing? When the citadel sing? When the citadel falls? Set a red alert, you can bet your shirt. Someone's gonna get hurt. And it's time to talk, time to talk, time to talk about the CIA. Time to talk, time to talk, time to talk about the CIA right now, right now. Sheer funk. Did you learn about the tapping of your telephone? Did you leave your lover in the lurch? Did you turn up alone in an unknown zone? Did you burn? Did you burn? Did you burn in the strip and burn in the strip and burn in the strip and search? It's a dead cert when you flirt with dirt. Someone's gonna get hurt. Set a red alert, you can bet to your shirt. Someone's gonna get hurt. So don't blurt, keep it curt. Time to talk, time to talk, time to talk about the CIA. Time to talk, time to talk, time to talk about the CIA right now. Right now, right now, right now. Someone's gonna get, someone's gonna get, someone's gonna get hurt. Like this. Blam! You just blow them away, Uncle Sam.
Okay. I don't know what to say as to something like that. That was great. New York Chant and Sheer Funk. sort of, you can actually hear the music in the background while you're reading that. Is that something that goes in your mind while you're writing your poetry, is to have the music there, or do you write the lyrics and then sort of pattern it F or something?
I quite often write with music playing. I like building rhythms and using the rhythms to suggest words. So quite often it's the music that actually suggests the lyrics rather than the other way around. And I often write when I'm, say, out walking or travelling. That is, I start composing words inside my head, and it's, say, the rhythm of a train or a bus, something like that, or just my own footsteps. I think if you use rhythms, it gives the words an incredible extra dimension of power. And you find that the piece begins to take you over. You get absorbed into the actual performance of it. Yeah, I've got an album coming out, plug, and a book as well. A book called Meat Boutique, an album called Intoxicated.
What label?
The album's coming out on Blurg, which is the label of Instigators, probably the best-known band on that label over here. Subhumans were on it. It's their label, in fact, or the singer's label. They've now changed the name, changed the lineup, apart from the singer, now called Culture Shock, and doing similar vocals and really good sort of strange punky reggae stuff behind the music. The album's just great. They've got a couple of heavy dub tracks on it that are really good. You have to get hold of a copy of the album and play that. So there you are, plugging my own label. Disgusting, isn't it? It's coming close to advertising. Change the subject. I'll go back to a little bit about the way I write. The material is written based on musical rhythms, that sort of thing, a lot of it. And certainly a lot of the material I perform, I also write for On Page. I work as a journalist, and I also do what's, I suppose, what you call straight literature. Not straight edge, but straight. So I write fairly straight poetry, but that's not the sort of material that I like to go out and perform. If people want to buy that, they can read it on the page. I've had a novel published, stuff like that. Going back to performance material, and those two are both ones that I've used as lyrics. New York Chant, I've recorded with a reggae band. With the same reggae band, I've done a version of Sheer Funk. I've also recorded Sheer Funk with Toxic Reasons. When they were over in England, I did a session with them.
How does that work out? Do you ask the band to perform with you, or did they ask to perform with you?
It just sort of happens, really. Most bands know what I do, that I get to know. And if we get a chance to go in the studio, if we're getting on okay, it just seems like a fun idea, and we just try stuff out. It's really a matter of whether we're both free at the same time as a studio happens to be free. That's really it. I mean, I was supposed to have recorded, for example, with Sisters of Mercy. That never came about simply because myself, the band, and the studio never were simultaneously free. That would have been quite a good thing to do, you know. It wouldn't have done me any harm. I quite like trying out pieces with different bands so that I maybe do one, two, three different versions of the same piece of writing simply because you discover more about the writing from it.
Pretty much improvised session when you were with the band?
Yeah, no, things to do on a Saturday night, if you've played the version that I've done of that with The Burial, I did a version of it with a band called To Be Continued. That was great. I mean, that's a really good example. When we went in the studio, I'd never met all but one of the band. I'd never met before. I happened to know the guitarist, and I simply said to him, should we go in the studio? And he goes, yeah. And we laid down three tracks and mixed them down and everything in 8 hours. Those tracks each have been on sampler albums. One of them's on the album that I've got coming out. All three were on a cassette album that I had out called Britannicus Demo. They got really good reviews and stuff like that. I mean, to have done that from zero in 8 hours, I was really pleased. You know, it was a really good session like that. I like the spontaneity. You lose out on refinement, but I think the spontaneity is much more exciting. So, and I'm no great shakes as a vocalist, so you might as well just slam it down and see what it's like at the end of it. So, I mean, occasionally you dump tracks, but I mean, for the most part, there's something exciting gets into what you put down, and that there's at least one track out of a one-day session that's worth using. So, things to do on a Saturday night. For everybody whose life depends on having a good time on a Saturday night. There's sort of people, you know, that come up to you on a Thursday going on about this party that's coming up, and Friday they're getting really excited about it. Saturday they go to the party, and it's a real drag. And Monday morning they're complaining about it at work and everything. And Tuesday they're moaning about it. On Wednesday they hear a whisper about a party on Saturday, and, you know, whole thing starts again. It's a bit about sexism, stuff like that as well. So, things to do on a Saturday night. Light up a cigarette, let's try a discotheque. Going too fast down the underpass. Head into the dashboard, then through the glass. Car crash. What a mess, what a bloody mess. Things to do on a Saturday night. Things to do on a Saturday night. Music, shouting, sound down the street. Outfit, hairstyle, neat, neat, neat. Pushing past people, packed in the hall. Paper cup of cider, spilling it all on the kitchen floor. Get some more. Rock and reggae boom from a darkened room. Get happy. Get drunk, get off with someone. Things to do on a Saturday night. Things to do on a Saturday night. Topless barmaid down at the pub. Rock and roll band in the Labour Club. Booze bird, bang bite, gang have fun. Fight fist blood for a laugh, then run. Things to do, things to do. Things to do on a Saturday night. I said things to do, things to do. Things to do on a Saturday night. And hey, you lucky little bastard. She smiled at you, yeah. In with a chance. Dear, come here often. Do you want to dance? Bim bam bop bop bamaloo bamalay. Don't rate yours, will she go the whole way? Shooby doo dee da da ramalamalee. For peanuts, pal, so she'll do for me. Things to do, things to do. Things to do on a Saturday night. I said things to do, things to do. Things to do on a Saturday night if you can't think of anything better. Two more quickly.
Go right ahead.
Right. Stiff with a Quiff. Stiff with a Quiff is the sort of bloke who staggers out of a pub in the north of England. He used to be a rocker years ago. He's become this great fat beer barrel of a bloke, and you take a look at him and you think, good God, he's going home to a wife. 6:30 and a belly full of grub. Stiff with a Quiff quits home for the pub. 7 to 11 in the public bar. We're here for the beer and a laugh, ha ha. He's wed to a flues, but they hardly speak, so he hits the booze, hits the booze, hits the booze most nights of the week. And it's a lousy life, she thinks. It's a lousy life and it stinks. Flatulent, fat and 40, 45. He's put 14 pints of bitter inside. Nout in his pockets as he staggers home, but a packet of cigs and a greasy comb. He slams the door, kicks off his shoes. He's fast asleep before the tea break. And it's a lousy life, she thinks. It's a lousy life and it stinks. It's a lousy life for the washed up wife of a permanently plastered, permanently plastered, permanently plastered, pissed up, pissed up, pissed up, pissed up bastard. 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 She looks at beer, he slumped in his chair. Call it a marriage, there's bugger all there. An hour more telly to drunken snores. What with him and the box and the household chores. Home's a hopeless habit, a bit like heroin. It's needle stuck firmly under her skin. And it's a lousy life, she thinks. It's a lousy life and it stinks. Here's one that I've not actually recorded with any band, but I mean, it's fairly obvious when you hear the piece that it could be turned easily into a lyric. There's a butcher's shop in Bradford called the Meat Boutique. Bradford's where I come from in Yorkshire. I'm a vegetarian, or near enough. I eat dead fishes, but not dead anything else, you know. Tempted sometimes to eat dead people, but that's about it. Meat Boutique, anyway, is based on the idea of, you know, if you really want to put people off meat, why not make them wear the stuff? And so you turn meat into fashion, and this is what you get. This actually includes its own adverts. So, Meat Boutique. With the chic freak clique from the Meat Boutique, you wake in bacon, shave in gravy, take a wash in warm goulash, hit the street in a suit of meat and knock 'em flat. Knock 'em flat, knock 'em flat in your pork pie hat, then wham, bam, beef and lamb, mutton your button and stew your shoe. Advertisement. Feel fresh as flesh with twice the charm. Try gammon, roll on underarm. God damn veal and ham, walk and talk as suave as pork. Advertisement. Don't waste yourself. Baste yourself. Life is easy, bright and breezy when you make your skin go greasy. Don't be a drippin' drippin'. Don't be a prattin' fat. It's lard, lard for the lad who's hard. If it ain't lard, it's lardy-da. So slam, blam, brawn and spam. Sirloin steak and streaky bacon. Wham, bam, beef and lamb. Mutton your button and stew your shoe. God damn, veal and ham. Walk and talk as suave as pork. Kazam! Unique. Sleek, at their peak, they're the chic freak clique, the chic freak clique, the chic freak clique from the meat boutique.
Great. Title of your book.
That's it, yeah, yes. The book's to be called Meat Boutique, along with a picture of the actual shop for those who don't believe that it really existed. Well, I mean, what I try and do with using words, one of the things is, if you get up on stage as a poet, most people go, oh God, and head for the bar. Right? So, I mean, what you try and do is present it in a way that makes them turn around. I mean, for years performing in England, I used to have people come up to me going, I really don't like poetry, but yours is okay. Now there's more people in England working with words in that sort of way. And, I mean, what strikes me so much is that people who don't like the spoken word at all will be really into lyrics. They'll be really into what certain bands have to say. And, it seems crazy that working as somebody who uses words and performs in words, that you can't latch onto that and use it. Most of all, it's fun. It's much more fun than standing up and just reading straight poems, you know? I mean, I enjoy being on stage. I get a real buzz out of it. And I don't tackle getting up on stage as a poet as something onerous and serious and, you know, I don't get up there and suffer for my art unless people throw cans at me or spit at me.
Last year you toured with the Detonators and the Instigators here in the States.
Yeah.
Spoken word performance pieces are pretty new to America, poetry readings, things like that, especially during a punk show or a gig. How did your performance go playing with those two bands?
Mostly really well. I mean, it's this thing, like I said, most people think poets are going to be boring. So if you're not, people react really strongly the other way, and people had nothing to compare me with, most of the people that saw me. So, I mean, they were really surprised by it. And I think, you know, it's hard to get up and be a great band when people have seen loads of great bands. But if you're halfway good as a poet, people are really enthusiastic. So, I mean, I got up at Fender's. I think Circle Jerks were the headline band then. And they'd never had anybody get up like that. And Fender's is quite tough. I mean, there were fights going on all over. There was blood all over, all these skinheads all over the place. I survived. I actually went down quite well. I think a lot of people didn't know what to make of it. You know, like, who is this crazy person trying to get up on stage without a band? And the fact that I was English as well, you know, it was I think people were just sort of... I was up there for about, I suppose, about 20 minutes. Bam, 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 really fast. And people were still trying to size up what I was like by the time I'd already walked off stage, you know. So it's quite good. I mean, doing gigs over here reminds me of what it was like when I first started getting up and doing this sort of stuff in England. Now there are so many imitators in England doing this sort of thing that really people come along and look at you and decide whether you're good at what you do, not whether you're original, you know. I suppose some people over here will have heard John Cooper Clarke, will have heard Attila, will have heard someone like Lynton Kwesi Johnson. And I suppose some of the rap stuff that's going on now is very much the same sort of thing. You can take away the music from rap and you've got it. I think there's a lot of room for it. I mean, I hope some people out there listening will be people who write lyrics and have thought, well, I've got to find a band, and maybe they'll start thinking, well, maybe I don't need to find a band, I can just get up and do it. It's great.
Now, how did you start off? I know you ran a club in your town called Adam and Eve's.
Well, Adam and Eve's was one of the venues that I worked bands at. For 7 years, I ran punk gigs in Leeds, Bradford area. That's West Yorkshire in the north of England. Putting on just about every English punk band from, say, The Damned, GBH, Peter and Test Tubes, right through to just small local bands. I just got tired of doing it in the end. I stopped about 2.5 years ago. Having done it for 7 years, I was getting stale doing it. I'm now putting on alternative cabaret stuff. So we have fire eaters, jugglers, folk musicians, poets, comedians, all sorts of stuff, and that's good fun. I find that really stimulating, and a lot of that's new stuff. The styles are new. It's not the same sort of thing that punk is beginning to move into being, you know, the sort of wearing the uniform, playing a certain type of music rather than innovating. I think it's a shame that punk hasn't carried on innovating, and in a lot of ways it's very much cliched. You know, you ask someone to draw a punk who isn't into punk, they draw one, then you go to a concert and you see loads of people who look just like that. That's a shame, you know. I think I strayed away from your original question. What was it?
Did you start performing in your own club, or were you performing before that?
Oh, I was performing way before I started putting bands on. I mean, it was the other way around. I started putting bands on because I'd been working in bands for years. Started off first off as a fairly straight poet in the 60s, because I'm incredibly old. Gradually, I started working with musicians because I got bored with what poetry was like then. From working with musicians, I started getting into writing kind of poetry that was rhythmic, that you could scream and shout instead of just reading out. And from that, I moved to doing a lot of solo work. In the meantime, I was still doing work with bands, and I still do. I got really sick of promoters who messed you about and venues that messed you about. And I thought, I can do this better. So, I mean, I started putting on gigs simply out of frustration with people who would, often not because they were rip-off merchants, but just because they didn't know how to do it, would put on concerts and mess about the audience, the bands, the club, everybody, and clubs that would rip people off something rotten, you know. This sort of thing where you get hundreds of people in a club for a gig and then the bands get paid a fiver each. I mean, I believe that still happens over here. So, we don't want to actually go naming clubs, but read the letters page of Maximum Rock and Roll. I'll do another piece if I can.
Yes, go right ahead.
Just to show that I don't only slag off America. I do a lot of stuff that's very relevant to British audience. It seems a bit pointless to do stuff over here because a lot of the references aren't relevant. But if people think I come over here and just slag off America with pieces like Time to Talk About the CIA, I slag off Britain as well. I get in a fair amount of trouble at some of the gigs I do in Britain for some of the stuff that I get up and say, especially if, say, the police are in the audience or something. We can be ruder to our police because they don't have guns. So this is one that explains itself. It's called We Don't Support. We don't support, we don't support, we don't support the South African regime, their wine in our carafe, their fruit in our cream. We don't support, we don't support, we don't support the South African regime, but, well, we can't quit the raft when it's in midstream. And we don't support the South African regime, but there's not enough staff on this here team, and, well, why go daft when they're just a bit extreme? We don't support, we don't support. We don't support the South African regime. Those old photographs, you know, they're way off beam. They now treat the Kaffirs with a lot more esteem. And we don't support the South African regime. Race riots, that's a laugh. Sure, they shout a bit and scream, but a black boy's got a graft, so he's bound to, you know, let off steam. We don't support, we don't support, we don't support the South African regime. You talk as if we're pawns in their crafty scheme, but they're really not half as bad as they seem. And, well, politics are naff, let's have a change of theme. And why blow the gaff on an investor's dream? I mean, of course we don't support the South African regime. More wine from the carafe? How's your fruit and cream? You'll notice I use repetition a lot as well.
Right.
Again, that's something I steal from lyrics. You know, in a rock lyric, you can use repetition aloud. I tend to use it far more than any of the other rant poets. I use very direct musical rhythms.
Can you describe rant poets?
Yeah, they're the poets like Seething Wells, Attila the Stockbroker. They were probably the first two to actually describe themselves as rant poets. Came out of the work that people like John Cooper Clarke started doing, where you simply get up and virtually machine gun the audience with words. I suppose the aim is to make people listen whether they like it or not. You don't get up there and you apologise for writing your poetry and say that you would like people to listen and ask for a bit of quiet and say that what you're reading comes from the heart. You get up and prove that it comes from the heart by screaming blue murder at them. That said, that style maybe started purely like that, but has obviously developed quite a lot. So you listen to someone like John Cooper Clarke, and though he still reads out in that same sort of machine gun way, there's a lot more to the way he puts words together than there was when he first started. And someone like, say, Seething Wells, who now writes for NME, you only have to read his journalism to see how he's taken that style of slamming words together in an extremely aggressive way into really good high-powered journalism that uses language in a way that jumps off the page at you. I think all of those who are still performing regularly would be reluctant to be described now in England as rant poets, because that's become a bit of a tired, clichéd term. And certainly they've evolved as writers way outside of the narrow confines of what originally was rant, which was just to get up, as I say, and scream. So you didn't quite sound like a politician. Well, you sound like some politicians, but not most. It lacked subtlety, and I think...
There's a thread of sarcasm and humour in some of the poets.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a mixture of using humour, politics and aggression to try and get across, and also to try and make words interesting on their own. It was a reaction against all that boring love and peace poetry. The poets that wrote reams and reams about either sitting alone in their own room, going through some sort of enormous emotional crisis because their baby had left them, or people who got up on stage and wanted to tell everybody just how great they were in bed and what a wonderful sex life they'd got. I suppose someone over here who almost made the transition from love and peace into a really aggressive style was Charles Bukowski, except he lapsed into self-indulgent, alcohol-ridden performances. It's a shame. He had that aggression. Another poet that I really think is good, he's dead. Some of the best poets are dead, and some of the worst ones are better dead. But William Wantling, who was in prison. Again, he lived around San Francisco. He was in San Quentin. He was a junkie. There's a book called The Awakening that's really good. He's a bad editor of his own stuff, but the best of his material is really, really great.
Now, what about, say, someone like Gil Scott-Heron, who's very poetical?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's better. It would have been better if rant poetry had been described as street poetry, because that's closer to what it is. And in that sense, Gil Scott-Heron's in the same sort of vein, yeah. I mean, The Revolution... what is it? The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. That's great. B-movie, stuff like that. He used a lot of the same techniques that rant poets do. He uses them in a very, very much a black context. And I don't think somebody who's white imitating that would come across really well. In the same way as I've got reservations about, say, white rap artists. I think rap is very much a black medium. And certainly it's something that sounds very artificial, done by European people who put on this phony mid-Atlantic accent in order to do it.
Could you see yourself doing rap?
I'm reluctant to do it because it's not a style that I've actually come up with. It interests me. I really enjoy it. I love the way rap uses words. I think that if you're talking about being a street poet, you've got to draw from your own experience, not other people's. So, I mean, let's say Lou Reed has a whole load of imitators, but the fact is that pieces like New York Telephone Conversation or Walk on the Wild Side, lines out of there are ones that only he could have written, or only him and his contemporaries could have written, and written even now by someone living in New York, it would sound slightly phony. And I think it's got to be of its time and of its place, this type of writing. So, I mean, anybody doing it, I'd hope to hell that it wouldn't just imitate the sort of stuff that I'm doing, but that they'd draw on their own experience. They'd try and look at things around them and draw rhythm out of it. Listen to the rhythm of actual conversation, which varies according to your accent, the area you come from, everything. Listen to the emphasis of words and stuff like that. Play around with the sound of words. Repeat words over and over again in your head. Build rhythms around them and rhymes and stuff like that. It's a way to gradually become aware of the way language can fit together to form rhythmic patterns that assert themselves. And very quickly you find that the writing takes over. that's great. It then becomes a real buzz just writing it. And I find that once I start into a piece, I get 2-3 lines, and then suddenly the thing starts catapulting into its own action. And all these lines go through my head that would be possible, and you're jotting down bits of lines and stuff like that. And I write these chaotic pages full of stuff, and then piece together bits out of it, pick bits out, and do a sort of, use a cut-up and honing down process in order to come up with the final piece. It means that you've got to work hard to keep a grip on what you're actually trying to write about, because the rhythms and words can just take over, and you end up writing something that's fairly nonsense, but sounds fun. I like to try and keep the actual message there and the political content there. Most of my material is political, but I'm probably less humorous than a lot of the performance poets. I see that as I enjoy humour, and but I see being able to work as a political artist and get that across as much more important than cracking jokes. But that's just my view.
How about an example of a piece that just came together all of a sudden?
Yeah. This piece is called Hitler's Birthday Party. You may have played this one, I don't know. He's nodding.
Yes.
This one is a song lyric, but it came together really quickly. And although the language seems fairly complex, it came from writing down a whole load of one-line ideas and then picking out the ones that seemed to fit the best, that seemed to work the best, and then hammering the whole thing together by just really sort of pacing up and down, chanting bits of lines to myself. I'm half Jewish, and my dad's side of the family were German Jewish. A lot of them died in the Holocaust, and it's not something that's remained with me as something really huge, but it's something that I've been aware of ever since I was very, very young. I found it upsetting that bands like, say, Joy Division, now New Order, were able to use that sort of imagery for themselves. Now, when you think of countless bands that use fascist imagery that aren't necessarily fascist, for those who don't know, Joy Division were the women that were kept back in concentration camps after their families had been killed because they were halfway good-looking, and they were mostly gang-raped by those that had killed their own families. It seems like walking around with Joy Division on your T-shirt is as offensive as, say, wearing a T-shirt that has the words nigger woman rapist on the front of them. If a band was called that, people would find it offensive, because the meaning of Joy Division has been slightly lost. People don't find it so offensive, but Joy Division knew full well what it meant when they called themselves that. New Order isn't far removed from that either. New Order, again, is part of the fascist vocabulary. So that one example, there's loads. Hitler's Birthday Party. It's a sort of contemporary party. Punk, funk, junk and getting drunk, Hitler's birthday party. Disco fascismo non-stop, a chance to Decker dance. A proper Wagner blitzkrieg bop in leathered elegance. There's a Führer in a paper hat, the wittiest of blokes. A Charlie Chaplin lookalike who's telling Jewish jokes. A killer down the Keller, smashing sense of humour. Lovely little fella if you ignore the rumour of Ten Commandants torturery in beer and borch debauchery, with lots of smoke and smack and coke at Hitler's birthday party. The fascist thing, their annual fling, it's Hitler's birthday party. There's Aryans and Hitler youth, angel skins and goys, sophisticated and uncouth elite exotic boys, and savage girls in uniform who mingle in the spree. A military band performs and all the drinks are free. I said all the drinks are free for Hitler's birthday party. And there's Joy Division Jewess jobs for all the men in black, junkers, junkies, Mosley mobs and SS men in max. They show the film he's made, you know, Mein Kampf Part 2 on video. There's lots of sex and total wrecks at Hitler's birthday party. Pricks and kicks and cocktail sticks, Hitler's birthday party. It's just begun, there's bigger fun and you're all invited for Hitler's birthday party. Why, there's much, much more, like, ooh, total war at Hitler's birthday party. Punk, funk, junk and getting drunk, Hitler's birthday party. Pricks and kicks and cocktail sticks, Hitler's birthday party. Lots of sex and total wrecks, lots of sex and total wrecks, lots of sex and total wrecks, Hitler's birthday party. And if people think that's melodramatic, and you only have to do, like I did yesterday, go in and have a look at some of the sex shops just near Port Authority, Times Square, and you'll see magazine after magazine after magazine that twins up the exploitation of women, bondage and all that sort of thing with fascist imagery. You see it loads. You only have to go to virtually any metal concert to see exactly the same neo-fascist uniforms worn as pop gear. That there's a narrow dividing line between using the language and actually being it. It's the same. I've got a piece, a performance piece that talks about the proximity between the attitude of a man walking down a street who sees a woman and wolf whistles at her. The proximity between that and the act of rape. It, both of them involve men seeing women as just meat that's there to be sized up. It's the same sort of language. A man who thinks he's got a right to whistle at a woman and shout after her as she walks down the street, take that a step further and he's touching her, take it another step further and it's right. I think people are too little aware of the fact that if you get involved in the periphery of something, you're creating the atmosphere that generates the extreme of it. And a really great example is read Ed Saunders' book on Charles Manson. And that proves that Charles Manson wasn't just one weirdo. He was an extreme of a really weird scene. Read it to find out Charles Manson's involvement with, say, the Beach Boys. That's interesting.
Do you make any changes of your poems once they're done?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I change them every time I read them out, just about. I mean, I've inserted loads of extra bits while I've been reading those. I haven't stuck exactly to the text. Hitler's birthday, I put in several words there that I've never put in before. They change each time you read them according to the speed you're reading, and you can slip in extra words and stuff like that.
So each performance is not the same?
Oh, yeah. Every performance has got to be different. I never work out beforehand exactly what I'm going to read. The performance dictates what comes next. I'd hate to think that I ever got up there and did a performance that's samey. It's one of the advantages of not being in a band. When you're in a band, again, it's a group of people and you've got to accept a whole lot of compromises. That includes working out a set list beforehand and working to fixed rhythms that the band's working to. So if the drummer's going slightly slow, everybody has to go slow. Being on your own on stage, you know, nothing goes wrong unless you go wrong. And if so, it's your fault and you've got to put it right. That's a great freedom, you know. That's one of the things about being anarchist. I think once you get the confidence of being an individual working alone, it's so much better in a load of ways. Then if you want to work with people, fine. But it's from choice, not because you feel that you can't do it on your own, you know. It's one of the buzzy things about going up on stage alone when people are used to just seeing bands, you know. Right. Civic pride. Here's one written specially for councillors in Bradford. But I could actually name them. It's so much specifically for them. But, I mean, I think such is the corrupt world of counselling, of being a councillor. Or any sort of civic dignitary, that it applies almost anywhere. See what you think. I believe it certainly applied to people like former mayors of New York, New Jersey, whatever. Civic pride. Wherever there's a post and wherever there's a seat and wherever there's a place where the council meets, money, 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 money makes most of the moves. The public pays for the private apartment, keys in the pocket of the chairman of department, who clocks to expenses £1,000 for where he's never been and for what he never did. And to oil the wheels on shady deals, a councillor churns out a spiel that appeals to the deaf, dumb and blind of the kind that you find have been left behind when they've wined and dined all the ghosts and ghouls and the gangs of fools. And the folk who'll vote for a twister of rules. And the bloke who wrote for the local press did a whitewash job on the whole bloody mess. Theft of the lefties, stories of Tories, it doesn't take a genius to know where the law is. Backing up the bankers, the wankers who thank us, all of the crawlers come to outflank us, to charm us, disarm us with bargains of jargon, slogans to plant in our own back garden. We've a red under the bed and a fanatic in the attic when we swallow hollow lies from the pseudo-democratic. These are the ones, the smug little buggers, who've the nerve to talk about thugs and muggers, while they do much worse to the public purse and contracts go to the firms who know that wherever there's a post and wherever there's a seat and wherever there's a place where the council meets, it's money, 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 money. Money makes most of the moves. Civic pride. Don't you just love it?
You're known as an anarchist. How did you get involved with that?
That's weird. I mean, there aren't that many anarchists in Britain. I think like anywhere else, people have this idea of anarchists being people who bomb buildings, that's it. I sort of became anarchist by default. That is, I found that I didn't want to vote, and I looked at why. And it was quite simply that I disliked the idea, A, of voting for a system and a bunch of people that I had no faith in whatsoever, and B, that I really disliked the idea of giving up my mandate to somebody else. I mean, why the hell should I approve anyone to represent what I think and feel, let alone me and thousands of other people? You know, who the hell does that one person think they are that they can stand up and speak for all of us? I have no desire whatsoever to pass on my mandate to anybody else. Along with that goes thinking like organisations don't exist for people. People exist for organisations. As people come first. Without people, organisations couldn't exist. Right? And very quickly, most organisations start existing primarily for themselves in the same way as people have to do. You know, basically, in this world, you're on your own. And if you're an organisation, you very quickly reach the point, even if you set up as, say, a charity, you very quickly reach the point where you exist simply for yourself. So you get situations where, say, a charity like Oxfam in England has had to go through a whole load of rethinking because so much of the money donated was going to maintain the organisation and very little of it was reaching the people. That is changing with Oxfam. They've done a radical rethink and stuff. But still, you've got organisations that are supposed to be helping people with vast complexes behind them. You can look at the Catholic Church and see how wealthy that is compared to the Catholic people. Why? You know, how can that sort of thing exist when I mean, Christ himself was preaching, give up your wealth. You know, Christ would be horrified and disgusted with the Catholic Church. I think you only have to look at some of the churches in America to see that that's gone one step further, and the churches are actually existing to make themselves wealthy. That happens with any organisation. I mean, it's the cliche of all power, of power corrupting. And I think anybody who gets in a position of power over other people, that is anybody who becomes part of some sort of structure or organisation, puts themselves in a very dangerous position where they're very soon compromised, and where I think most politicians go into politics with a desire to pioneer and change things. They very quickly become part of a system that is sour, and they have to compromise. And you've got a great example in how corrupt the presidency is here. It's not that American politicians per se are corrupt. It's that the system they have to go into is so corrupt and so eaten away because it's been there so long that you can't get high in it without having to compromise so much. And the same applies with any system involving money. I mean, money's been here so long. You've got this thing of, if you want to enter any sort of structure that's been there for any length of time, you have to accept compromises. You have to change the way you dress, the way you look, whatever. So what you've got is, I think, the thing is, you have to dismantle organisations in order to keep clear what you want. If an organisation is there for any length of time, it becomes so sour that it's got to be got rid of. So I see anarchism as not simply destruction for its own sake, but living with change instead of status quo. instead of letting things stay as they are, make them change. I mean, we naturally are evolving creatures, and we're going through an aging process, and everything that is us is change. It's unnatural to want to keep things as they are, to try and make a static situation around you, where you have a family, a job, a whole setup around you that is completely stable. That is not security. That's stagnation. And security is learning how to live with change, not aspiring to some sort of status quo. So having become anarchist, I find it great. I mean, I've been anarchist now for years, and really committedly so. It makes life a lot easier to live in some ways and a lot harder in others, because it's very difficult knowing where you draw the line, you know. It's like just being vegetarian. Do you wear leather? Whatever. And I mean, that's a tiny example, but, you know, whatever you do, wherever you go, the pressure is on you to conform, to become part of a mass. And to be too antisocial makes you not merely a threat to society, but a threat to yourself as well. You become weird. You suddenly pick up a gun and walk down the street and shoot people, as the guy did in Hungerford in England a couple of weeks back, as we're broadcasting this. And I mean, that sort of situation has happened in various countries, where people have just flipped completely. And I think you get this thing where you can't opt out completely. If you want to be part of society, it does involve compromise, but you have to be in charge of those compromises. You have to choose the compromises, not have them inflicted on you without you knowing it. And I think it's knowing that's really good. The more you know about your own situation, the more you're in charge of your own life, the more you think about it. It's not that you don't compromise, it's that you know what compromises you're making, and you're able to measure those and know where you stand. And individual first, everything else later, is, to my mind, proper anarchism. That is, everybody has a right to self-determination and to understand themselves better, and not feel that if their marriage isn't working, they have to go to marriage guidance. If their money's not working, they have to go to accountants, solicitors, whatever. But that they feel that if they use those people, they're using them, not being used by them. That they feel they can control their own destiny and can determine their own lifestyles, their own area of work. And if you have individual first, it doesn't mean just selfishness, because it also means that you respect every other individual. It's a weird thing that the world's full of millions and millions and millions of people who live side by side without, for the most part, killing one another. Most of them don't. You know, all the people on my street, I don't see them as a threat. We live side by side. I trust them, I actually like them. You know, I don't think that as soon as I turn my back, they're going to shove a knife in me. So, for the most part, people don't kill one another. They respect one another incredibly. I mean, you only have to be in, say, the subways to see. I mean, people push and shove a bit, but I mean, so many people. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people, all going places, all with separate places to go and everything like that. And very few of them punch one another in the face and that sort of thing. For the most part, they go where they're going, respecting everybody else's territory. And people don't even push against you. They'll go be very careful just to occupy their own space. Governments don't do that. Countries don't do that. Countries kill. Countries wage wars. People don't. As soon as you get an organisation, it becomes cutthroat. And I think that you can learn so much from the individual. Wow, that was a long speech.
That was a lot, yeah. To end up, how about a poem?
Yeah, sure. Been a big campaign recently in England against heroin, run by the government, who've suddenly decided that there's a really good reason for objecting to people taking heroin. They've realised that there's no tax on heroin, and it's okay if people drink and drive and kill more people in one day than heroin kills in a whole year in Britain, but at least they're paying tax to do it. So, it's a squalid holiday at home on Heroin Street, But there's a whole lot worse than coke and skag, like cash and nationality. From patriotism to profit, once you're hooked, you're never off it. So wheel and deal, steal and blag, rip the bank and burn the flag, cause we're the money grinders, monkeys, second fiddle, finance flunkies, jazz and dazzle, dollar junkies. And each of us'll swallow jingo, anthem speech and hollow lingo, till our number's called in the global bingo. And stabbing life, the punchline's lyrical, twist the knife for a bloody miracle, murder's rife, that's oh so cynical. Using drugs has a single snag, when the drugs use you, there's the drag, that's clinical. But there's plenty worse than coke and skag, like cash and nationality, the price tag, the painted rag, cash and nationality, so wheel and deal, steal and blag, rip the bank, burn the flag, there's a whole lot worse, a whole lot worse, a whole lot worse than coke and skag. And here, especially for your radio station, this is something that I really hope can become sort of the theme poem of the radio station. It's all about how to get your record played on radio stations, especially in America. It's for all Jello Biafra's friends across the courtroom. It's one that I'm sure he's going to be broadcast on this show just really, really regularly. Record on a radio show. Mr. Whisper, he tells me, shifting units ain't easy, lest you get the media, a 1, 2, 3, radio, the press and the old TV, do what's done, not what's not, pop that lot with a shit hot shot, better watch your language, never say fuck, little bit of talent, lot of bloody luck, if you want to get your record on a radio show, plug your record on a radio show, record on a radio show, ah, 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 record on a radio show, ah. Mr. Whisper, he tells me, crawl a bit to the BBC, get to know thine NME, New Musical Express, add a little dash of bribery, pit your wit to get that hit, wear whatever cap'll fit, better watch your language, never say f**k, little bit of talent, lot of bloody luck, if you want to get your record on a radio show, plug your record on a radio show, record on a radio show, ah, 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 record on a radio show, ah, ah. Literature, don't you just love it, hey?
Well, I'd like to thank you for coming down.
All right.
It's been a pleasure. Good luck with the tour.
And good fun, thanks.
And everybody, the address once again, Nick Tocek, T-O-C-Z-E-K, 5 Beach Terrace, Undercliff, Bradford, West Yorkshire, B-D-3-O-P-Y, England. And if you missed the number, give me a call here. The number is 516-632-6901. I know Nick would love to hear from you. Okay, that was recorded about a week and a half ago when Nick was in New York, just prior to his Canadian tour. And once he gets back to England, I'm sure we'll hear from him. A lot of things he said, a lot of good ideas he's got going, he's a really involved person, and I'm very fortunate to have him out here. Unfortunately, he wasn't out here long enough. I only was able to spend a day with him, wish I had more time. 11:23, you're tuned to WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 FM. You're listening to Turmoil. You just heard an interview with English poet Nick Tocek, and we'll be getting to the music real soon. Just want to run down shows that are going to be taking place the next few weeks. Usually do that around this time. Not too much going on, but we'll start with tomorrow night, Thursday, September 10th, at the Anthrax in Norwalk, Connecticut. Sonic Youth, Puzzle House, and Invaders from Sears. Also on Thursday night, the 10th, and also Friday night, the 11th, at the Ritz, the Ramones. And if you won tickets on this show before for the Ramones at the Ritz, that show that was canceled and postponed, your tickets are good for the Friday night show, the 11th. You have any questions? Once again, the number here is 632-6901. Friday night the 12th, or the 11th, is it? Friday night the 11th, at the gas station in New York City, Ed Gein's Car, Apple, Any of Several Weasels, and a new band on Buy Our Records. They won't tell us the name of the band, though. Moving on, Sunday the 13th at CBGB's, the matinee featuring Verbal Abuse, Psycho, and Lethal Faith. Friday night the 18th, at the Anthrax, Problem Children from Canada, The Trash Brats, Target 19, Saturday the 19th at the Anthrax, The Adolescents, Adrenaline OD, and Manitoba's Wild Kingdom featuring Wild Dick Manitoba, formerly of the Dictators. Sunday the 20th, the matinee at CBGB's with The Adolescents, Underdog, and Sick of It All. Tuesday night, September 22nd at the Cat Club, The Dead Milkmen. Thursday the 24th at the Anthrax, a heavy metal night with Omen and Liege Lord. Friday the 25th at the Anthrax, Ed Gein's Car, Zombie Squad, and Three, which features Jeff Nelson, formerly of Minor Threat. Saturday the 26th at the Sundance, Suicidal Tendencies. Tuesday, September 29th here at SUNY Stony Brook, a spoken word performance by Jello Biafra. Friday the 2nd of October at the Anthrax, Ludachrist, Rest in Pieces, and Sonic Plague. That show's still tentative. Saturday the 3rd of October at the Anthrax, The Membranes, who are from England. Friday the 9th of October, Bald, Breakdown, Sick of It All, and Super Touch. And Saturday, October 10th at the Anthrax, No Trend, Angry Red Planet, and Skeletal Ambitions. And Jello Biafra will be performing up at the Anthrax sometime, either in September or October. And that wraps up all the shows I have. 11:26 on a Wednesday night. My name is Steve Kreitzer. Coming up at 12 o'clock midnight, Chris Crowley. He'll take you into the early morning hours. Let me get rid of some of these things while I'm on mic. Some fanzines that are out. Get them out of here. A new issue of Scut is out. And as before, it's done here on Long Island. Features a vegetarian food in New York City list. A Long Island scene report that's pretty funny. Long Island bands, what Long Island bands have available or collector's items, things like that. Some poetry, some stories. A report on the Gilman Street Warehouse in California. Something about a guy who likes getting milk poured over his head. And lots more. And that's Scut, available for 39 cents postage. Where's the address? Of course I don't have the address here, right? No address. That's what happens when these fanzines don't put their addresses in the paper. Still looking for the address, and of course it's not in here, so you have no idea where to write to. Oh well. Also out is Plagiarism, put out by a guy in Smithtown, New York. What's he want for this? This is 44 cents in postage, and it features a report about smog, pollution, an interview with me, and that's reason enough to send away for it. A review about the Batcave, some opinions, some skate news, a Nuki Dog comic, some addresses, things like that. And that's Plagiarism, available for 44 cents postage from, just write Plagiarism, 11 Washington Court, Smithtown, New York, 11787. And that's all the fanzines I have with me tonight. Last time, I'm going to mention this, Turmoil is looking for someone to help out with the show. And if you want to get involved with Turmoil, help out, do some of the behind-the-scenes dirty work, just write me a letter telling me why you think you should be part of Turmoil. And you can send that to Turmoil, Post Office Box 174, Stony Brook, New York, 11790. Put down any experience you have in typing and writing, computers, records, anything like that. Looking for someone to help out in correspondence, some computer work, and some help with the show in general. So, Turmoil, P.O. Box 174, Stony Brook, New York, 11790. Put down your age and where you live, and if you have transportation to Stony Brook, or if you're even on campus and you want to come down and help out for an hour or two a week, put all that information down. Coming up later, we'll be giving away tickets to a show. No, we won't. We'll do that next week. We'll give away some tickets. And one show I forgot to mention, September 18th at Irving Plaza, Live Skull, Flipper, and De Kreutzen. And that's a Rock Hotel show at Irving Plaza. And I'll give those tickets away next week. to the music. For all you metalheads out there, there's a band out called The Melvins. They're on Alchemy Records out of California, and I figured I'd do them a favor by playing them because Alchemy Records is pretty cool. This is from The Melvins' album, Gluey Porch Treatments. We're going to hear Happy, Gray, or Black here on Turmoil.